funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst. From swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean, the Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to preserve the past to inspire future generations of dreamers. This is accomplished through the youth education program focused on deserving junior high students across California. The legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture, is woven into the Foundation at Hearst Castle's mission. Julia Morgan's life can continue to inspire and empower young women and young men all over the world. This is one of the few opportunities to donate to such an important cause that not only changes the lives and perspectives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors. Please go to the website, foundation@hearstcastle.com, to learn more about how you can help us with our important mission.
Silver Dollar City Amusement Park, situated in the heart of the Ozarks, offers incredible thrill rides such as their legendary seven roller coasters. But it's the staff that makes the destination world class. Many of the employees have been there for decades, with the treasured few working there for more than a half century. Come along and join me for a visit with some of the iconic artisans, including June Ward, who's been lovingly making candy there for 55 years. Back in the day, June was a stand-in for Ellie Mae when the Beverly Hillbillies filmed a series on location at Silver Dollar City in the 1960s. Silver Dollar City is an international, award-winning theme park located in the hills surrounding Branson, Missouri. The park features more than 40 thrill rides and attractions, live shows and concerts, and more than 100 resident craftsmen, 18 restaurants, and 60 unique shops. And it all started with a historic cave, one of Missouri's deepest. And of course, cave tours are a highlight and the roots of the theme park and its 1880s theme.
Brad Thomas, president of Silver Dollar City, right here in Branson, Missouri.
Tell us about your personal connection and how you wound up here.
You know, I actually visited Silver Dollar City when I was a kid. I grew up here in the Ozarks, and I was fascinated by this place. I worked my way through undergraduate school and through grad school in retail, but yet Silver Dollar City was always on my radar. So a couple of years out of grad school, I applied here.
To do what position?
To work in merchandise. Uh-huh. So I started in merchandise 31 years ago.
Wow.
Then I worked in festivals, and I've worked in a variety of positions, and I've been in my current position since 2008.
You can hearken back to elementary school when you first fell in love. What today still resonates with your heartstrings?
Oh, number one, the people. The people of this place intrigued me as a kid, and they intrigue me today. I remember in the candy factory as a kid, one of the workers said something like she had never been out of Stone County. Silver Dollar City is situated in Stone County, which is in the very extreme part of southern Missouri, borders Arkansas. And I walked away from her thinking, was that true? She'd never been out of this county? And you know what? Those stories and those comments make this place so real, and the personalities and the hospitality are so important to the overall guest experience. A lot of places have fun rides.
Well, I was going to say, that's fascinating listening to you, because one of the first things you mentioned Silver Dollar City is, oh my God, the roller coaster.
We have rides that people will travel from Europe to visit southern Missouri because of these amazing rides, and our festivals from the spring all the way through Christmas. But I have to tell you that those things may get people to visit here, but the thing that keeps people coming back time and time and time again is typically our people, the food.
Without the people, that's what makes people fall in love with any place.
You know, I've been here 31 years, to some of the old timers, I'm still a newbie. And you know that you're in a culture that's immersed in longevity when people can be here for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. Behind our Wilderness Church on Town Square, we have a grove of dogwood trees. There are about a dozen of them. And each one of those trees represent an individual who has been here for 50 years.
Wow.
And those individuals, as part of their 50-year celebration, we plant a dogwood tree. And that dogwood tree stays there with them forever.
I love it. So without even having to say, it follows that you have multi-generational.
We do. You know, we employ individuals in their teens, and we love that because then we typically can keep those individuals through their high school years, maybe through their college summers, and you never know, but some of those individuals could end up being in leadership here or working in different kinds of positions for decades to come.
So there definitely is that pride of collective ownership.
Yes.
Those who work here.
Yes.
And it all harkens back to your harvesting from small town America.
There are people that work here that come from all over America.
Oh, really?
They may come here because they've retired, but they choose to move to the Ozark Mountains of southern Missouri. They can enjoy fresh air. They can enjoy the amenities of a cities, but yet they can also live on the lake, or they can live on a river, or they can overlook the Ozark Mountains. And those individuals may enjoy that part of their life, but yet they're not ready just to sit at home.
So you harvest them
we to do.
Work here part-time.
We love our folks that have chosen to spend maybe some of their senior years here, but we also love it when a teenager chooses to work here.
Over your shoulder, steam engine. Tell us about that.
We have a steam train. That train been running the tracks at Silver Dollar City since 1962. Here's a fun little tidbit. When that train was purchased, it was moved here. The two Hershen brothers, who are now in their 80s, but the two Hershen brothers way back then were directed by their mother to ensure that the train would make the incline of the track. And they're like, Mom, of course it will, because they were told it would. Mm-hmm. And so they got it here, they placed it on the track, and guess what? It didn't make it up the incline.
Oops.
And so they summoned the dozens of employees, not thousands back then, but dozens of employees that were working to head down there, and they started pushing the train, and it would get momentum and then go back to the depot. And they started thinking, okay, if it pauses and it can build up some steam, what can we do while it's paused that entertains the guest as they wait for the steam to build up? And thus the Silver Dollar City train robbery was birthed, which is part of our entertainment. And today the engines are much stronger and they can pull that incline anyway, but it was birthed because they had to build up the engine to have enough steam to get up the hill.
I love it. Well, let's go back in time to how this place started. That's a great story.
It's a fascinating story. We've been family-owned since the day that this park opened.
How did it start?
It started with Marvel Cave, which is a national landmark. It's been on the National Registry since 1972. The cave is below the town square, which is where we're sitting right now. And that cave, the Statue of Liberty can actually stand up in that cave. It's fascinating.
That's mind-blowing.
You know, Missouri is the cave state. Mm-hmm. There are caves all over these hills and the mountains, but there aren't many caves that are as spectacular as Marvel Cave. And the stories of Marvel Cave are rich. In the 1880s, there were actually miners that were mining there. Each had ownership in the mine. They never got wealthy, but they eked out a living by just pulling out bat guano, which were those bat droppings. Back then, it was used for makeup, but it was also used as ammunition for gunpowder, for dynamite. So the miners never got wealthy, but they did make a little bit of a living. And there was a town on top of that cave. And that town is really the roots of what now is Silver Dollar City. And that's why you see this 1880s
theme. Well, it's like a main street.
Well, and the 1880s theme of this entire park really has roots to the 1880s town that was on top of that mine.
That's really cool. So they start out opening, selling tickets, take tours of the cave.
They do. For 10 years, the Hershens operated the cave. The cave's first paid tours were in the early 1900s. So from 1900 to 1950, a family owned that cave. Then the Lynches come in 1950, operated the cave for 10 years. And then May 1st, 1960, Silver Dollar City opens, and the rest is history.
It just exploded over the last half century, hasn't it?
It has, absolutely. But you know what? there are so many men and women whose fingerprints are on the success of Silver Dollar City, but every single day, this park has been owned by the Hirschen family. And their love for our guests and their love for our employees is what makes us survive and thrive today.
And what's fascinating, watching from the outside, you guys are perpetually reinventing yourselves seasonally. For example, right now we have Southern Gospel time, right?
You know, we open the city in March during spring breaks, and then we load that calendar with festivals. We have a bluegrass and barbecue festival in May. We do a street fest with all kinds of Cirque kinds of acts on the streets in April. We go into summer with all kinds of activities for families, and then we head into Southern Gospel the tail end of the summer when kids are back in school and adult couples are just starting to visit. And then we do an elaborate, crazy, good harvest fest with craftsmen and women from all over the country, a cowboy area of the city, and then our pumpkins that glow at night, thousands of pumpkins.
And they're all happy.
And they are happy. They are happy. Not gory, not spooky, nothing haunted. And then we do Christmas like nobody does Christmas. We don't just outline our buildings. We light every board of every building. And right here on the town square where we're sitting now, just over our shoulders, is an 8-story Christmas tree with 400,000 RGB lights that dances, starts at 5:30 every night and then dances to music and the lights. It is Christmas, maybe on steroids.
I was going to say, exactly, the heartland of America on steroids.
That's right. And you know, our food changes by time of year as well. Like at Christmas, we do turkey and dressing, and it's pumpkin pie and hot wassail. The lemonade stands are gone, and we do hot wassail and hot apple cider. So you're here in the Ozark Mountains with a little bit of crispness in the air, but you're getting a Christmas experience and immersion. Folks will come here any time of the year, but especially during the holidays. There may be a branch of the family that lives in Florida and someone else resides in Colorado and someone else resides in Texas, and they'll meet in Branson, Missouri so that they can enjoy some family time together.
That's really cool. We'll check in our time only because I've hit my allotted time with you. I think we gotta let you go.
We do.
So if we wanted to learn more about your world, where would you direct us?
Just SilverDollarCity.com is our website, but you can also find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter,
TikTok,
Instagram. You can find us, and you can find a lot of stories of folks who visit us. My name is Brad Thomas. I'm the president of Silver Dollar City right here in Branson, Missouri.
Awesome. Brad, thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
The Beverly Hillbillies in the 1960s, late 60s, early 70s did six episodes here at Silver Dollar City. Home in the Hills really was the number one program on CBS. Well, look at how beautiful she is in her younger years. Well, she was a bit tall.
I was 5'6", and I just found out last Monday I'm just barely 5'1". Ask me how happy I am about that. Just ask me.
And she absolutely, in the little booklet I'll give you, you'll see breathtakingly beautiful, big blonde hair. They said she's stand-in for Ellie Mae.
Oh, wow.
And she got to be, now you tell your part.
Which one? Oh, the real part.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you the real part. Tom, right? So, you know, they thought that being a stand-in for Miss Donna Douglas was really something. So here's what it consisted of. I was on the set all the time. No matter where she was, that's where I was. And we would just sit there when it was time for her to do a scene prior to her time. I was asked to go stand on this X, wherever the X was. Did I tell you I was 5'6" back then? And I'd stand on that X, and it was hot out there, and they'd put this and this light and that light, and they'd get the sun and sparklers and everything. And there I stood in all of that heat and my makeup just coming from right down here under that dust mop cap, just right on down, looking like a wilted daisy. And then they'd say, thank you, June, and then I'd go back and sit down, and then she'd walk out there just fresh as a daisy. And there I was, honey, my makeup
is doing the hard work.
Doing the hard work, and here I am, still doing the hard work.
Where are we right now?
We're in Brown's Candy Factory.
Down in the basement.
Oh, honey, this is behind the scene. I'm telling you, down here, we make all kinds of stuff, and sometimes we make a mess. You want to eat a little candy while you're down here, darling?
We just had lunch.
What does that have to do with eating candy?
Well, then I might explode.
No, you're not going to explode. There's always room for sweets.
Unfortunately, you're right.
I know that. I know. I could tell by looking at you. You're a sweet man, and all sweet men have to eat a lot of candy. And no one is allowed, if we know about it, to come in here and leave without having a sample. Because if you think I'm going to be responsible for sour people walking around the streets of Silver Dollar City, you've got another thing coming. I'm not going to be responsible. No.
Well, are you the one that makes the candy?
I'm one of them. Like right now, we have three candy makers here today. We've got one upstairs, and this is Amanda over here.
Hi, Amanda.
You don't have to be nice to her. She
no.
just got back from Florida.
Oh, okay.
On a vacation. We're never nice to anybody when they come back from vacation while we've been here working. And look at her, all tanned and rested, and just look around at the rest of us. It'll show you who's been here working.
What do you have laid out there? What are those?
This is dark chocolate pecan clusters, and this is milk chocolate pecan clusters. Now, something that we normally don't have to offer you is we've got some turtles, and I'm going to cut some of them here in a minute for you. And over here, see, we've been eating lunch. So while we were eating lunch, my chocolate's melting. And when I go back to work, we're going to dip these cashews in that chocolate. But we have to put them out here and temper that chocolate down. So that's what we're going to be doing. Now we're going to start eating. Are these people with you?
Yes, ma'am.
Do we be nice to them,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Do they work with you?
Yeah, we're all kind of together.
And where did we get you from, Tom?
I'm from a little town called Morro Bay, California, Highway 1.
And how did you find us?
Mark right here.
Mark found it?
Yeah.
Hi, Mark.
Mark works for Missouri Partnership.
Okay, see that?
Yeah, I do.
That's caramel, pecans, and a little chocolate.
Oh.
Mark.
He wants to know who you all are.
Well, of course I want to know, because there might be a test at the end of this, and I sure want to pass it. Now, over there's Fred.
Thank you.
You are welcome. Do you ladies want a little? You had some the other day,
yeah,
didn't you?
Yeah.
What I tell her, I wouldn't tell you or what I tell her. Because I said, here, I'm going to let you have a sample piece. I put worms in to her, and she said, oh, I love them. Let me have some. So I did. That's what I do sometimes. I don't know where that comes from, but it just jumps out. What do you think about that?
I'm busy right now.
Mm-hmm. Hey.
I'm working.
Mm-hmm. I see that. I see you're really working at that.
Well, it's your fault.
Mm-hmm. You like dark chocolate?
Mm-hmm.
This is pecans. We're working with pecans. Dark pecans. Try some of these. And here's some milk chocolate pecans.
Wow.
Dark chocolate's just sweet enough to be darn good, isn't
mm-hmm.
it? I think. You girls want any dark chocolate?
Well, I guess you're not going to let him lick the spoon today.
Not today. But we do have a lot of fun. Do you want a dark cluster?
June, I think we gotta go.
Do you have
you're
to go
gonna make
so
me
soon?
So bad.
No. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Why would you think that? Well, let me tell you something. We cook all of our candy in copper kettle. Copper absorbs all the calories.
Oh, perfect.
Where did you get that silly nonsense that we were going to cause you to gain weight? The only thing we're gonna cause you to do is to be sweeter.
All right.
And stay happy.
I can do that.
Good.
June, thank you so much for sharing.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah.
We're so proud of what we do here, and we're proud of the company we work for. So you don't have any problem asking us any questions about where we work or what we do or do we like it.
I love it.
You know how many seasons I've been doing this?
Couple.
55. Oh. I've started my 55th year with this company.
So you're getting the hang of it, huh?
Yeah, I'm just about. In fact, I told the owners a while back, if you continue to buy these high-dollar products for us to work with in here, someday I'm going to be a darn good candy maker.
There you go.
How's that?
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
She's the only person who will. This, if the CEO sees the phone ringing, he will.
I'm sorry they won't let you talk.
I'm just letting everyone else, you know, we want to hear from you.
Okay, well, you know, he talked and Mark got to talk a little bit, man. You just had to stand back and I thought, I'm going to let you say something.
I'm just hanging on your every word is the thing.
Okay.
You were saying about...
Yeah, the CEO will see on his phone that it is from the candy factory and he will
pick it up.
The owners will pick up her calls, everybody. And if she doesn't like something, boy howdy, we're going to hear about it.
That's the only way you can correct a problem is tell someone that is in charge that can correct that problem. In fact, this morning I called the head of M&C to tell him we have a problem. And I said, the young man that I know that will fix the problem does not have the funds to go buy what needs to be fixed here. And he said, you're exactly right. And the second in command's already called and said, we're on it, June. That's the way they do. But they don't only treat me that way. They treat everybody that way.
She is our queen. She's our queen and queen of candy.
I love it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Tom, we want you to meet Mr. D.A. Calloway. He came years ago as part of the River Rats, a Dixieland jazz band. It was the funniest band, had a huge following. They made everything a big old funny joke. Well then, of course, where do you put somebody like that when they get older? Well, you put them into management.
Right.
D.A. became the executive producer of our Southern Gospel Picnic and our Bluegrass and Barbecue. He's the seven-time winner of...
Eight-time
winner, Promoter of the Year, by the
Society for Preservation of Bluegrass awarded us 8 times Promoter of the Year. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
I love bluegrass. I love the gospel music too, and of course, we got it all. We've got 60 gospel groups coming here in 11 days. Nobody in the world does that.
That's crazy. What instrument do you play? What's your preference?
I played trumpet mostly, but I play piano.
Fiddle?
Oh, I have played fiddle, mandolin, upright bass, a few things like that, yeah.
You still in a group?
No, I don't play hardly at all. I just play to torment my wife, and that's about it.
That's enough. Huh?
Yeah, that's enough.
He's not telling you everything.
No,
he torments his Facebook followers. Every morning, we anxiously wait until D.A. puts up whatever it is he's going to put up. It might be a joke, it might be a story, it might be a Mark Twain quote, and it might be a piano ragtime number. Anyway, D.A. got more Silver Dollar City in his heart and soul than about anybody on this part. You and June.
I don't know how many people come out here, but several thousand probably average every day. I mean, I don't know their names, but I know them by their face. Some of them I know where they're from.
So a sense of family, huh?
Sense of family, yeah. It's like a family reunion, yeah.
So the world is actually quite small.
The world is very small. You bet it is. I wouldn't want to paint it, you know, but it's a small world. I love the gospel music people. You can almost tell by looking at them. They dress up a little bit, a little more sense of decorum than the general public, you know. It's just a little bit different. You can usually just look out at the crowd and tell who's here for the Southern gospel music.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
So one more thing I got to have you tell, because bluegrass music is the heart of the American music. It's also been with Silver Dollar City since before these gates opened. Wow. Just tell them a little bit about bluegrass music.
Well, bluegrass music wasn't even a thing until the 1940s, you know. Bill Monroe came along, and when he started putting his bluegrass boys together, and he was on the Grand Ole Opry and all, and then about the late 40s, here came a guy named Earl Scruggs from North Carolina playing the five-string banjo, and that was the invention of bluegrass. Bluegrass started having a sound right then that's still very popular today. So even though we're still doing bluegrass today, and we're not singing about mules and log cabins and coal mines anymore, we're singing about contemporary issues for real people, and bluegrass is alive and well right now. In fact, there are more bluegrass fans right now than there ever have been.
That's impressive.
Yeah, if you go to the what they call the International Bluegrass Music Association in Raleigh every year, which I've been out there a few times, 50,000 people attend that. The mayor of Raleigh said it's like the Super Bowl coming to your town when the bluegrass people show up.
That's correct. All right, well, thanks again.
Yeah, thank you.
Torment your Facebook followers. I find with a lot of our people, the older they get, that DA is retired, but he wants to come back here. He's so humble that he shares so much credit, and I see that person after person who experiences the culture of being a part of the Silver Dollar City family, how you begin to really see the world through teamwork. You really realize it's not about me, 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 me. It's about all of us and what we can do together to bring the best experience. He's a prime example. It's hard to get him to talk about himself. Did you notice?
Yeah. Understatement is modesty.
Yeah.
So is the train running out of...
Oh, yeah. Oh, we've got the train runs all day.
And is this guy the gate guard here?
Yes. Do you want to talk to him?
Good.
Okay. And your name is Bob.
So you're the gate guard for the train, huh?
I am. Yep.
The top for you?
If I don't open the gates, it'll stop for me, yeah.
You're here to protect the pedestrians, right?
Right. When the train's coming, I close the gates so nobody can walk through, because that would not be a good thing.
Tell them about our trains. Tell them about how we make them great and we have our own roundhouse.
We do have our own roundhouse, yeah. And we actually have three different trains. Now, they only run one at a time, but we actually do have three. But they usually run one while they, you know, do maintenance on the other two.
We have a roundhouse and a group of people who make sure these trains are in great shape. They are authentic steam trains.
Wow.
And, you know, who does this kind of stuff anymore? Keeps yesterday alive to be relevant for today. Children ride that train around the park and absolutely love it. A favorite and often a first ride.
My name's Jeff Walker, and of course my address is here at Silver Dollar City, 399 Indian Point Drive.
And so you're the main potter here, right?
Yes, I'm the lead potter here in the shop. We have a full shop here where, you know, we make pots year-round. We don't ever leave. There's usually four of us sitting here throwing pots. A couple years ago, we made 18,000 pots between four of us. As far as demo, one of us comes upstairs, you know, about every couple hours or so when all of us are here. And we do the demo in front of people.
So you have your little bat cave downstairs where you do your...
Yeah, it's funny you call it a bat cave, because 2 days ago I did have a bat hanging from one of the steel I-beams downstairs. It's like, yeah. The studio's right below us, and that's where we have four different workstations set up for everybody to throw. So I have two 16-cubic upright bisque kilns, and then I have an 82-cubic-foot gas giant out back that we do all our glaze firings in. So we'll go through somewhere between 40 to 60,000 pounds of clay a year around here.
Do you ever play around and mine your own glazes?
We mix our own glazes from scratch around here, and I'm constantly testing new recipes. We have used clay from the pool at the bottom of the cave. I've actually made a nice brown glaze out of that, so yeah.
It makes it unique, doesn't it?
Oh, it does, very much so, yeah.
In provenance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not something that they'll let me go take a whole bunch of, so yeah, it's very...
You go down at night.
Yeah. They kind of watch that. I think we got a camera on the front of the cave. They won't let me in, but yeah.
So tell us, among the people that come here to Silver Dollar City, that walk in, what are they most enamored with?
The fact that we are the home of American craftsmanship here. We have craftsmen all over park, you know, doing their thing, practicing our craft. We have young people that come in every year and study with us, and we're just constantly promoting craft. The big thing in my shop when they come in, they want to know, was this made here? And of course, everything that we do here is signed by the actual artist who did it and has a stamp that says Silver Dollar City in it. But yeah, the big deal is that they're so interested in the fact that we're still here doing these old style crafts and promoting the craft and keeping it going, because there's a lot of places in the U.S. where our craft has died out.
Been automated.
That there is.
There's also that fingerprint, that tactile.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's the thing. I've been told for years by some of the people in our educational system that if you could figure out how to put a stylus on a pot after I threw it, like those there, you could actually hear the conversation from what I was doing.
Oh, funny.
Because our finger rings are there, and I guess those little vibrations are there. But yeah, to me, that's the greatest thing about hand-thrown pottery, is the fact that you still have that mark of my hand on it. I do not like to clean everything up, because if you clean everything up, there's no difference between it and a molded piece.
Exactly. No longer artwork.
That's correct.
What do you find that people are most attracted to and enamored with with the works of pottery art that you show here?
The fact that we still do a functional line, that we're not, you know,
practical.
Doing that. Yeah, it is practical, it's utilitarian, people can use it. They love the fact they can come in and people collect coffee mugs from us. They'll buy a coffee mug every year, or they buy the pie plates. It's just the functionality of everything we make they're truly enamored with, because that keeps us tied back into the 1800s, because that's what happened back then. I make functional utilitarian ware, and we make lots of it.
You think you'll die at the potter's wheel?
If I'm lucky, yes. I hope. I told an instructor when I was in college, when I was 19, that I would learn till the day I die. Even to this day, after 40 some odd years of throwing pots, I still believe that. I still learn every day when I have interns in here or I have an apprentice in here. They force me to look at things so much differently than what I normally do, because there are things that I do for them that sometimes they go, oh, I don't quite understand, and I have to think about what I just did so that I can try to explain
it. They take you out of your box.
Yes, they do. Yeah, they make you function totally outside the box, because sometimes you got to figure out what they're doing to be able to help them. So
I love it. Do you have a website here?
Just the Silver Dollar City site, and if you go out on it, there is a section that where they do have the pottery shop and the glass blowers and everything, and I believe they have a nice big write-up on me out there someplace too.
And your name again?
Jeff Walker.
Jeff Walker, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Tom. Thank you.
My pleasure.
We're at the Silver Dollar City Blown Glass. And what's the official name of Blown Glass?
Hazel's Blown Glass.
Hazel's Blown Glass. Two masters of glass blowing. One is Gabriel Bloodworth, and Gabe, his father worked here for decades and was a legend. Sean is our most highest senior master, and Sean Waite.
And you guys both live nearby?
Yeah, I live in Branson.
Yeah, I live up in Springfield.
So glass blowing has been integral in your life, your whole life, right?
Oh, yeah. Both of us started pretty young. I started helping my dad when I was about 15. We helped out a little glass shop, kind of in the backwoods of Hollister. And then we ran a little glass shop up in Springfield for about 16 years. And then Sean has a unique story where he kind of, well, how exactly did you come into it?
Well, I grew up in Michigan, and there was an artist that taught classes near me. So I got a start at it, just learning with him, and got a job with him.
And so you both like making works of art, basically.
Yeah. We both love the craft. We both love the history of it all, and just the challenge.
Tell us about where we are right now. You put on demonstrations.
Yeah, we demonstrate our craft. Whatever it is we're making, we're doing it in front of people, just telling them not only the history of glassmaking in general, the history of Silver Dollar City craftsmanship, and just how we make things.
Glass blowing and demonstrations, they've been a part of Silver Dollar City for a long, long time.
Oh, geez. It all started with somebody out of Arkansas that knew that glass blowing was a great demonstration, and they've been doing it for 40 years now, and it's been closer to 50 years.
Yeah.
You know, we wound up making 90-95% of everything here in the gallery, and it's something that we absolutely love.
That's amazing. Most of these works of art are your guys.
Oh, yeah.
We do them, and we do them right there in front of folks. Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. It's amazing. The diversity of style.
I think that's one thing that we all really like to do. I say it's kind of the creative with the consistent. We like to make consistent things, but we always like to leave plenty of room for our own creative voice. When I make something, it's going to be very much my style. When Gabe does it, it's very much his style.
So you guys talk about teaching the history of glass blowing. So it follows that you've probably been to some glass museums where you've seen some ancient works of glass.
Yes. Anytime I get a chance to see glass making of history, you know, I think it's always really intriguing. You can see things from thousands of years old, and you see a lot of things that people still do today in those same objects.
That's where I was going to go, is that glass blowing is like pottery in that it's frozen in time in that moment of solidification.
Yeah.
And therefore, there wouldn't be fingerprints because the guy had been burnt. But there is some evidence of their handwork from thousands of years ago.
One thing that's always great is you can go to a museum and you see a goblet that was made in Italy in the 1700s, and it's exquisite. And these are some of very, very high-level techniques, and they are executed as well as any glassblower now can do it, and it was hundreds of years ago. And it just shows the skill of the craftsman that was making it. And even with, you know, maybe wood-fired furnaces and things like that, where they're just hoping that everything stays lit while they're making it.
Do you guys ever witness classic works of glass-blown art in museums and go, ooh, I want to loop that into
all
my...
All the time. Yeah, all the time. You say, oh, that's a great idea. That's a classic idea. Or I haven't thought about mixing this with something else. Honestly, it was even just last year, I went to a museum and I saw a painting. And in the painting, there was a glass object, and I started to recreate that because I thought it was a really interesting piece of glass. So whether or not that's ever actually been made, I saw it in a painting and I got to use it. Yeah.
You copied the painter's brain.
I did. It was a collaboration. Yeah.
That's really cool. Is there anything you want to add? We could go on all day, but I think we got to move on.
I mean, it's one thing that Solar City really, really encourages us to do is just kind of explore a lot of our own ideas. And just like Sean was saying earlier, just our own styles. You know, while we make a lot of the kind of bread and butter items, we also make a lot of our own items or a lot of our own ideas that we bring in that are completely unique pieces of art.
That's really cool. All right, thanks again. This has been wonderful.
Yeah, I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Hard to pull me away from all your works of art. It's really mesmerizing.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, we really appreciate it.
And your names once again and where we are.
Yeah, my name is Gabriel Bloodworth.
My name is Sean Watt, and we're here at the Glass Shop at Silver Dollar City.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
Vivian Ireland. We are at Marvel Cave, what started everything in Silver Dollar City.
We just came out of the cave, huh?
We made it, this time.
Here we are.
In Marvel Cave in Silver Dollar City, Missouri.
How long have you been leading cave tours?
Over 8 years, although my very first cave tour was when I was about 4 years old with my dad and my grandpa.
It never gets old for you, does it?
Never. And I never stand in the bottom of that cathedral and looking up through the sinkhole without being in awe. It is, and of what people accomplished in developing this cave for tours.
Yeah. It definitely makes you feel tiny, huh?
Very tiny, which I don't mind at all.
So again, some of your outstanding memories and things that first come to mind.
Well, it's more of being in awe of what they accomplished in developing this cave for tours for the public. I mean, how often do you go 50 stories below the surface to a 40-foot waterfall? That first room is big enough to hold a 20-story building a city block wide in. And just the intestinal fortitude, as some people like to say, of those early developers of the cave from the Lynch family through the Hirschen family, and just the memories and moments they have created in so many thousands of people that come back over and over to see it.
The first modern Western people to discover it were bat guano miners.
Well, there are legends passed down through the Osage Native Americans of an accident involving a bear hunt where somebody fell through the hole. We do believe there were Spanish explorers in there in the 1400s. There are stories about that in what we call a Spanish ladder that's back off of one of the rooms.
There were some Spanish graffiti, too.
In the mud walls. So now, we can't get to those passages unless you're willing to crawl through mud for a couple hours. But there is Spanish writing in the mud and the walls in there that's been there for many, many years.
But no arrowheads or no Native American evidence.
Right, we've never found anything like arrowheads in our cave. Just the stories that have been passed down for centuries.
It's really cool. So you're ready to go again, huh?
You name it, I'll take it. You ready? We'll head in. It's amazing. There's over 6.5 miles of cave. We only do about a half mile on the tour.
Vivian, thank you so much.
Oh, it's been a blessing to have you. Have a wonderful day.
My name is Victoria Wazan.
Where are we? Special place.
Yeah, this is a special place. We're at Silver Dollar City and just got you done for the day. How did you like it?
I loved it. Not the first time here, but something new and special every time.
Yeah, and that cave just doesn't get old, right?
Well, it's so old.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's so, I'm not sure when the last time you were here was, but I'm sure you've noticed a lot of different things.
No, every time there's something. And I think that's part of destination amusement parks. They have to keep it fresh and new.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, I think Silver Dollar City, it's a unique park within itself because we're not just, we're not like a Six Flags. We're not just rides, you know.
Very much more than that, yeah.
Right, yeah, we've got that.
I haven't been on a ride today.
I know, but we watched a few. Yeah. But yeah, bringing that crafting element into the park, I think it really resonates with a lot of people because it's so different. And this is in my opinion, the best themed park in the world. Mm-hmm. There's no other place like this. So to the T. I mean, Tom, you probably didn't even notice all of the little electrical boxes that you can't see that we hide and all of this other stuff. And we really, I think, do a great job of keeping in that 1880s mining town theme, and all of the park ties into that some way, like we learned in the cave today, right? Marmaros, Fire in the Hole, all of that stuff. When you build a story, I think it's a great way to not only bring people here, but to keep them here. Mm-hmm. And that story keeps going, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, listening between the lines, the sense is that it's repeat and referral and multi-generational revisits that really drives this Silver Dollar City.
Yeah, multi-generational is a great word. You know, we cater to from 3 to 93. And grandma that's 93 years old, she may have come here in 1960. Yeah. And she may have seen the cave. And she's here today. And we have somehow brought the 21st century into this with these world footprint rides, these brand new attractions. We keep it up to date with our culinary team. You know, this is not a normal theme park in the sense that you won't feel like you're at a theme park.
It really is. It's kind of a cultural mecca destination for Americana.
Yeah, no, it's Midwest mecca, right? Yeah.
Well, heartland, you know.
Exactly, exactly.
Because Midwest, in my mind, I almost think upper Midwest, you know, Wisconsin, Illinois, or whatever. But it goes right on down to the deep south, very much so.
Yeah, and you know, the Ozarks, I think we put a lot of that into our park, our design, our terrain itself is unlike any other. I mean, there's probably not a park in America that you will walk up and down a big steep hill, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, the cave walk, right? How many steps did we go on? It was like
over 500. Yeah. And they're a labor of love. And as she was saying, you know, Jack built that cave, you know, up to what it was.
By hand,
yeah, with the cement, carrying all that. So, you know, I think it's a testament of what this park can really strive to do. And, I mean, it's only going to get better.
And how about you? How did you first come to know the park?
Yeah, so I graduated college right outside of New Orleans. And I came up here because my family had recently come up here. And just by fate, I had just tossed an application out there and someone picked it up, fortunately.
And so what do they have you doing now?
They have me doing publicity. Publicity, yeah. So I got the pleasure to bring you all around and show you, you know, all these great things that, you know, someone in California may not realize.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, somebody from Missouri, no-brainer, you know, or the state surrounding, but yeah, it's a different world.
It's a totally different world. And I mean, I always say, like, there's two sides of the park. You know, there's that thrill. There's those world footprint roller coasters.
They really are legendary.
Like, I mean, incredible. Time Traveler, there's only two like that in the entire world.
Wow.
One is in Branson, right? Mm-hmm. It's crazy. The other one's in Germany. So, you know, I think there's something for thrills and there's something for maybe not so thrill seeking, the crafts, the demonstrations, the food. I mean, I know we built you a solid menu today, right?
Yeah. And talk about home style cooking.
That's right. Yeah. A family style, a down home kind of Ozark feel. But yeah, like,
and talk for a moment about the different craftsmen, artisans that you have here. That's really cool.
Yeah, so all of our artisans, we're a crafts colony of 100 strong. We are the home of American craftsmanship as designated by the U.S. Congress. So, and I know Jeff talked to you a little about that, but yeah, it just continues to expand, and these crafters want to stay here. They want to be here. And you know, when we do our Harvest Festival, which we've done for years. I mean, it is a staple of this park. We bring crafters from around the nation, like they want to be here, and they come demonstrate, they create their heirloom crafts. So I think that's a part of the park that, you know, it's unique, and you don't, I think if you're the thrill seeker, you're like, wow, that's interesting. I never would have saw blacksmith, you know, at anywhere else, right? But yeah, it's a really unique part of the park, and I think we try to keep it that way.
To learn more, website, where would you track? TikTok?
You can visit our TikTok if you'd like. But our website is silverdollarcity.com. My name is Victoria Wazan.
Victoria, thank you so much.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Missouri. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So yes, please support your local NPR station.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst. From swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean, these experiences are unparalleled in their historical relevance and grandeur. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to preserve the past to inspire future generations of dreamers. This is accomplished through the youth education program focused on deserving junior high students across California. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, one of the most awe-inspiring locations in the world. The legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture, is woven into the Foundation at Hearst Castle's mission. Julia Morgan's life can continue to inspire and empower young women and young men all over the world. This is one of the few opportunities to donate to such an important cause that not only changes the lives and perspectives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors. Please go to the website, foundation@hearstcastle.com, to learn more about how you can help us with our important mission.
Why don't you go where Harlem sits? Pour another rib. Spangled gowns upon a bevy of high brown from down the levee, all misfits. Putting on the rib. Why, that's where each and every Lulu Bell goes every Thursday evening with her swell bow rubbing elbows. Come with me and we'll attend their jubilee and see them spend their last 2 bits putting on the ribs.